Energy with naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise. We have learned from Einstein's theories that matter and energy are one. Physicists believe that all systems in nature have their own particular way of vibrating. From the swing of a pendulum to the waves in the ocean to the light that brightens the sky each day, each of these oscillates at its own unique rate. In the same way, things such as rocks and minerals vibrate very slowly and at speeds that are imperceptible to us. Living things such as plants, animals, and man vibrate faster and appear to be alive. The same holds true for every thought, feeling, event, or word we speak. Each has its own frequency or rate of vibration. What many of us don't realize is if we take everything in our own universe down to its simplest form, it is all just energy. Join Dr. Rita as she explores questions such as, what are we made of? Why do we get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? Call in and talk to her and her thought-provoking guests. Send us your questions and get the help you need to move beyond any obstacles or challenges that may be affecting your life, right from the source. So stay tuned and explore your possibility.
Hello and welcome to Just Energy Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Louise, and thank you all for tuning into the show today. So we're going to have a very interesting show, a topic we haven't spent a whole lot of time on, but we're going to talk about Mars and the Moon and conspiracies and all kinds of stuff with someone who knows everything, just everything, and that would be John Lear. But let me give you a couple of little announcements, and we will get John on. April or September 9th through 12th, I will be at the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival in Angel Fire, New Mexico. It's going to be a great event. Stan Friedman's going to be there. John Greenwald's going to be there. There's just going to be a lot of really big names giving presentations. And it should be fun. That's September 9th through 12th. The webpage is aspefiles.org. Also tonight, I'm going to be on Ghostology Radio, and you can find out about that at fatemag.com, and that will be at 9 p.m. Central or 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And don't forget, we'll be doing the mind yoga question a little bit later on in the show, so stay tuned so that you can win a prize. So let me tell you a little bit about John and get him on, because I have a feeling that 2 hours is just not going to be enough time with this man. John Lear became interested in UFOs after reading Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time. His research into UFOs had led him into many different areas and varied conspiracy subjects. He is recently known for his writings on 9/11, Life on Moon, and the errors in Newton's second law and Einstein's general and special theories, which calls John total nonsense. Huh? I don't know. I'm just reading what it says. That doesn't make sense to me, but hopefully John's not going to be pissed. Is that really what your bio says? Or did that just, like, cut and paste wrong, John?
No, that's what the bio says.
Okay. Can you explain that?
Well, explain exactly what?
Well, it says you're known for your writings on 9/11, Life on Moon, and the errors in Newton's second law and Einstein's general and special theories, which John calls total. If I could read it correctly, then I wouldn't be going, what? Never mind. Cancel on that one, John. Hi, John. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Since it's your first time here, maybe you could just spend a few minutes kind of giving the audience a little bit more of your background, you know, how you became interested in UFOs and conspiracy theories, and, I mean, because you have a very illustrious career, as a pilot, and it just seems a little out there to go from, being, I'm going to say, in the mainstream, working for the CIA, to kind of going to the dark side into the whole conspiracy area. So how did that all happen?
Well, I started flying when I was 14 years old, and I always wanted to be a commercial pilot, and I eventually ended up with flying for an airline in Seattle called Air Club International and Aero America. And then when they moved to Berlin, I moved to Lebanon, and I flew as a captain for Trans-Mediterranean Airways, which gave me a tremendous lot of experience because we had 60 stops all around the world, and we made one round-the-world trip every day. And I've been chief pilot or director of operations for 10 or 15 airlines, and I've been check airman, North Atlantic check airman, and chief pilot for many airlines. But anyway, in 1999, the last airline I was working for was Kittyhawk International, and it went out of business. And I was 58, and at 58, it's almost impossible to get a job with an airline because you're too old. You have mandatory retirement as at 60, so the airlines don't want to waste the time training you, which takes about 4 or 5 months, just to put you on for a year. So I kind of gave it up. I did one more airline contract, which was for an airline in Cambodia that had a contract with Air India to fly the Hajj. And as you know, the Hajj happens once a year, and they take all the pilgrims all the Muslim pilgrims from all over the world to Jeddah, and they stay there for a couple of weeks, and then we bring them back. And I was over there for about 6 weeks doing some really great flying. We had some real good L-1011s. I had some really good crews, and we had a lot of fun. It was kind of a good way to end my career. And then I went into gold mining. I bought a the claims of a gold mine that had the man who had owned it had had a stroke and died, and his wife sold me the claims. And I spent about 12 years, first of all, cleaning it up because they hadn't done any cleanup at all. They'd always kept, they never took any trash off the hill. So it took me about 3 years to clean it up, and I won the 1999 award, State of Nevada Award for Excellence in Mining Reclamation. And then I started to rebuild the whole mine and get all my paperwork in order. And in 2006, I had my inspection, and the inspector said I had one of the best operations going. And then Senator Reed of Nevada put a million acres under the ACEC, which is the Area of Critical Environmental Concern, which means that it's an area for turtles and tortoises, and you can't mine there. So I had to tear it all down and start something else. But anyway, in 1985, I picked up Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time. Although I'd been kind of peripherally interested in UFOs, I didn't really have a deep interest because I thought it was all baloney. And after I read Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time, I realized this is true, this is going on, this is real. I went to his house, talked to him about it, and really just totally immersed myself in it while I was flying and while I was still acting as an airline pilot. And I used all my spare time to research and talked to everybody, and in those days everything was by phone or direct contact. There was no internet. And then I ran into a friend of mine who flew in Southeast Asia, Greg Wilson, who flew A-10s, and we got talking at one of the reunions here in Las Vegas, and he mentioned where he had been based at Bentwaters, and I said, oh, that's supposedly where that flying saucer landed. He said, no, not supposedly, it did. He said, I didn't get to see it because I was confined to quarters, but I'll tell you the guys who did. So I ended up talking with Pennington and Larry Warren and all the guys that were out there when the three aliens got out of the saucer and walked up to General Gordon, or to Colonel Gordon Williams, and this is all filmed by the Air Force. Colonel Gordon Williams eventually was transferred to the Philippines, became a general, and then he caught some disease over in the Philippines, and I think he spent a couple years at Tripler Hospital in Hawaii. But anyway, the fact that my friends from Southeast Asia confirmed this landing really got me going. And then about that time, Bill Moore and Jamie Chandra came out with the Eisenhower briefing, and everybody started talking about MJ-12. And I had to find out whether MJ-12 was true or not. So my family had always been involved in anti-gravity and had talked occasionally about flying saucers. My father was the prime contractor under Winter Haven for the Department of Defense in 1952 for anti-gravity. And he never talked at home about it. It was all hush-hush, very secret. Every once in a while, he'd mention, yeah, there are flying saucers, but that was about it. My interest wasn't peaked until 1985. But anyway, during this time, one of the visitors to our house was General Jimmy Doolittle, who was a very famous general and who led the raid off the Hornet aircraft carrier to bomb Japan. And I got the Medal of Honor for it. And anyway, our family was very close to his. We lived at 222 14th Street in Santa Monica, and he lived down on 3rd Street. And we were always very close. My dad died in 1978, but my mom kept very close contact with Jimmy, who had moved to and retired at Carmel Valley. And so in 1986-87, I figured the only way I was going to find out if MJ-12 was true or not was get my mom to ask Jimmy Doolittle, because I knew that Jimmy Doolittle was heavily, heavily involved in the UFO subject. So, make a long story short, I finally got her to call Jimmy and say, is John's gotten himself involved in something, and I'm not sure it's right or not, but I do want to know one thing. Is MJ-12 real? And he said, yes, it is, Moya, but I can't tell you anything about it. So that was the kicker that finally got me going full-fledged on the research of MJ-12, the whole flying saucer stuff. And in those days, I didn't think the military knew anything about it. And in fact, they've been involved in it since the 30s. They have agreements with several species of aliens up at Groom Lake. You hear the very, very famous Groom Lake. The one set of aliens has their own administration building up there. And there's a lot that goes on there that the public doesn't know about.
And we can come back to all that. Let's kind of stop here because you're talking about MJ-12. And for the people that don't know what that is, I mean, I think most people have heard of bent water, and so we don't really need to go there. But MJ-12 is, I think, for some people, a little obscure. So could you kind of go into that into a little more detail, what that is and how that really made it be real for you, I guess?
After the first public retrieval of a saucer in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, and I say first public retrieval, there were many retrievals before that, but after the first public retrieval, President Truman formed a group called MJ-12, and they were 12 people who were either in the military, either scientists or intelligence, 12 men, and they were to figure out what we could obtain from this craft as far as intelligence, what it meant, and make suggestions on what we should do. And MJ-12 is still going. There may be more members, but basically MJ-12 has run the whole show since 1947.
And so we're talking Roswell.
Pardon?
We're talking Roswell?
Right. After Roswell, MJ-12 was formed in August, I believe it was September, by Harry Truman. And they had authority to do anything they want, any research they wanted, in order to find out what the intentions were of the aliens and how the craft worked and how we could adapt it, maybe back engineer some of the stuff and use some of the stuff that we found in the craft.
Well, and since that point in time, I mean, technology definitely has taken a huge leap in general, and so it does make sense that somebody's been helping us along, or we've been helping ourselves along to move our technology forward.
Yes, everything we do is through the graciousness of the alien. We have invented nothing ourselves. It's always been helped by the aliens themselves. They have given us the information. We have come up with nothing ourselves.
You know, that's pretty bad. You know, I'm interested in the ancient alien theory thing. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that. We could talk about that if you want to. You know, but even back then, there was belief that the aliens gave us agriculture. They gave us domesticated animals. They gave us writing. They gave us astronomy. They gave us everything. And it's interesting to hear you use those exact same words to talk about our technology today.
Yeah, this isn't the only Earth. There's billions times a billion Earths in our universe. Our universe isn't 17 billion years old. It's infinite. It has no beginning, had no end. And it goes on and on and on. There's billions of different types of aliens. There's billions upon billions types of Earths. Some are more advanced than us. Some are less advanced from us. But they're all generally human-like and just like us.
Yeah, it's interesting. David Cereda on Facebook just posted a link because I guess they found like 160 more planets, you know, with that new telescope that they have out there that were Earth-size planets, you know, and kind of fit more of that criteria they were looking at. But anyway,
yeah.
You said that there were actually aliens on Earth. I mean, and I'm not necessarily talking about, you didn't say hybrid aliens here on Earth. You said aliens here on Earth, and they have their own facilities or buildings here?
There's aliens on Earth. They walk around all the time. You can see them in malls. The way you can, if you see somebody that looks just a little bit weird or has vertical pupils, just think in your mind, hey, I know you're an alien, and they'll look around and stare at you and then go on to what they're doing. But yes, they walk around, they intermix with us, they intermix with our government, and there's plenty around. As a matter of fact, there's so many saucers, all the stuff that you hear about in the paper or see pictures of, that's all our stuff. That's all the stuff we build down at the Skunk Works and the Phantom Works up at Boeing. The real alien stuff is hidden. And if you could take a light switch and turn off the invisibility factor of the saucers, the sky would be black, because there's so many saucers up there doing so many different things to us.
That's a little
the
scary.
The aliens are doing
about.
Something for us.
And so are these the aliens, or are these the human-alien hybrids that you could see in the mall, or is it a combination of both?
No, the ones that are in the mall are aliens. I don't know what you mean by hybrid. They're not made from us. They're their own species, and they look similar to us. Some are a little bit different. Like I said, some of them have vertical pupils, and that's how you can tell. Some of them have eyes that wrap around just a little more than ours do. Some look very similar, but like I say, there's billions of types of aliens. So the scarier ones and the ones that don't look like us won't hang around the malls, but the ones that look similar to us will go around the mall and hang around there and see what it's like.
Yeah, and what I was talking about, the hybrid, you know, when you listen to people that have been abducted, there are people that say, you know, they get their sperm, women that have been pregnant for a couple of months, you know, and then the fetus is taken away and, you know, they see, I mean, you know, I'm just kind of repeating the stories, which I'm sure you've heard those stories yourself. So do you think that really true?
Those are the Greys. They live on the moon and their job is to take care of the containers. We're containers, and what we contain is souls. And they're not in charge of the souls. They're just in charge of the containers. And they pick us up once when we're 3 years old, once when we're 7 years old, once when we're 13 years old, and then after that on an as-needed basis. And they pick us up, take us to the moon, and to take us into the underground laboratories and do a check, just like you check up on a car, check the tightness of the fan belt, the oil level, the battery fluid level, you know, all that kind of stuff, just checkups. And the people that had the stories of the being mistreated, it does seem to people that they have been mistreated because it's such a scary experience. You're really not supposed to remember it, and they go to all efforts to wipe it out of your memory, but some people do remember. Some people even go as far as going to regressive hypnosis to remember, and they're sorry they did it because it's so scary.
And everyone is taken there?
Everyone. Every person on the planet Earth goes through this.
Wow. I don't remember. where are we? I mean, because, and so they're on the moon. Let's talk about that. That was one of the areas I wanted to get into. So you said that the Greys are on the moon?
Yeah, there's millions of people that live on the moon. There's humans like us, but far more technically advanced and sociologically advanced. And the Greys. The Greys live basically underground. All their laboratories are underground. But on the moon, there's stuff we have on Earth. There's lakes, cities, rivers, factories. There's homes. There's villages. There's airports. There's all kinds of things up there. And just, you know, I have loads and loads and loads and loads of pictures of those type of things up there. And it's a very, very busy place, but it's hidden from us, and our government goes to every extent to make sure that that we don't find it out. As one of the facts are that the whole mission for the Apollo missions was to make us believe that the gravity is only 1/6 of Earth, and that there is no air up there. Well, first of all, no Apollo mission orbited or went to the moon. It was all faked. Every single bit of the Apollo missions were faked. But the fact is, the gravity on the moon is about 70% that of Earth, and the atmospheric level is about equal to 18,000 feet on Earth. And if you have to visit the moon, you have to go through a week of decompression, just like if you're going to climb Everest, you have to go at 5,000 feet at a time and stay there for a week or two to become accustomed, and then you go up another 5,000 feet. So if you go to the moon, you have to go through decompression for a week to get used to the atmospheric level, so that when you land on there and you walk outside, you don't have trouble breathing.
Okay, so the Apollo missions were faked, and so we've never been to the moon, period, ever.
You what?
We've never been to the moon, period, ever. Not one time.
What was your question?
That we've ever been to the moon. We have not ever been to the moon.
No government program has ever been to the moon. Now, lots of people, scientists and other kind of people, have gone there at the invitation of the moon people and taken on tours. One was Howard Menger. He went in 1956, and he wrote a book called From Outer Space, and he just passed away last year. I spent a lot of time talking with him about his trip. He describes in detail how he went through the decompression, and how when he got there, he was taken on a train ride that went all over the moon and showed the factories, the underground facilities, the snow-capped mountains, the beautiful gardens, all around the moon. He went for a week, and then they came back, and he wrote a book about it. And like I say, it's called From Outer Space. I think you can still get it at Amazon. They're very hard to find. But they do take people like Howard Menger and other scientists, but you never hear about it because people are afraid of ridicule. They're afraid that nobody will believe them, so they just keep their mouth shut and don't talk about it.
Well, it seems like in the last, I don't know, I became aware of it, and I'm going to say in the last year or so, you know, stuff out on YouTube, you know, it's one of the blessings of the internet is that there's so much information being put out there. You know, and sometimes you have to wonder, it's like, okay, is it true? Is it a hoax? You know, what's going on? where you see things that look like structures. I mean, when you see parallel lines in the ground and things that could not have formed in nature, you're only led to believe that there was some kind of, and I'm going to say, man-made influence creating this thing.
Right. I have some wonderful pictures. I have some pictures of the open pit mining at the north face of Copernicus. I have a picture of the fusion reactor at Aristarchus. I have pictures of the far side of the moon of a space terminal there that's obviously a space terminal that has a control tower and terminals and stuff like that. And there's a lot of interesting stuff. You just have to look for it. And the way you look for it is get any kind of NASA book with pictures that was published prior to 1970, because after that, they became really expert at airbrushing all that stuff out. Now it's done digitally. Anything you look at from Clementine or any other of the orbiters will be digitally, they digitally wipe out anything that they would consider offensive, and by offensive I mean houses or factories or anything like that. But by sheer luck, I've been able to obtain some things that weren't quite airbrushed enough, and you can see all kinds of stuff. And so, yes, the moon is a place where millions of people live, and the near side is, the cities on the near side are covered up with a technology called holographic technology. And what this does is this hides it with electronic way of creating a desert or a forest or sand or whatever they want to put over the thing that they're trying to cover up. And they keep the holographic technology on the near side that so that we don't see anything. We go out at night and we look at the moon, and it looks desolate, but it's not. There's just so much stuff going on up there. It's unbelievable.
Any thoughts or ideas of how long it's been occupied?
Oh, what?
How long the moon's, you know, how long there have been people on the moon?
Well, the moon was built inside Jupiter, in the bowels of Jupiter, and it was
Stop right there. Built? It was built?
Yeah.
Maybe we should start there.
Yeah, it was a spaceship, and it was built in Jupiter, and then it was towed here, I think about 15,000 years ago, and it was placed in the rotational lock, which means, a rotational lock means you can only see one side of the moon at any one time. There's no such thing as the dark side of the moon. Every side of the moon gets the same amount of light, but it takes 29 days to rotate, and it rotates exactly with its orbit of the Earth so that we can only see one side of it. But it was towed from Jupiter here, and as a matter of fact, the vehicle that towed it here is an electromagnetic vehicle. And it was written extensively by Norman Berggren, who wrote Ringmakers of Saturn. And Norman was an engineer for Lockheed for many years. And when he retired, he got some of the first original photos of Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 that took pictures of Saturn. And he found some vehicles in the rings of Saturn that are huge. One of those vehicles is 30,000 miles long and 2,400 miles in diameter. And in this book, he shows the pictures of these and details it in great detail. But yes, the moon was made on Jupiter, actually inside Jupiter, and then towed around Earth. And the people that live on the moon are basically our keepers. The Earth is a nursery, and it's where we learn to mature our souls.
Let's come back to that exact topic. That's a great one. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to John Lear about all kinds of stuff. This is fascinating. His webpage is, or where he contributes, is www.thelivingmoon.com. We'll be back with last week's winner of the Mind Yoga question after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Are you sensitive to energy? Want to explore the world beyond the five senses? Looking for a new career as an alternative healthcare practitioner? Then the Institute of Applied Energetics, Medical Intuition, and Energy Medicine Training Programs may be right for you. Our comprehensive curriculum provides students with a deep understanding of how to detect, evaluate, and transform the subtle body, as well as techniques for correcting energetic imbalances that may underscore a person's ability to experience radiant health. So if you are sensitive to energy, contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Visit www.appliedenergeticsinstitute.com and start your new career today. How would you like to live long and enjoy great health? How about creating solid bones and whiter teeth? Strengthen your heart and eyes and have radiant, youthful-looking skin. There is an ancient health and longevity secret that has been used for millennia in Egypt, India, and China that can help you achieve this. For the first time in the modern world, Pearlseum brings this ancient wellness secret to you. For more information about Pearlseum, visit www.productsforthesoul.com. Before we get back to the show, I would like to thank all of you for tuning into Just Energy Radio. Many of the people I've helped over the years were listeners just like you. If you're at a junction in your life, don't stand alone at this important time. Call me or send me an email. We can set up a private consultation so that you too can experience health, healing, and wholeness in your life. To find out more about the services I offer, visit www.soulhealer.com.
Now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. And we'll get John on the phone or back on the line here in a second, but I just want to announce last week's winner of the Mind Yoga question, and that would be Paula Fredette. And here was the question. This spiritual teacher from ancient India is commonly referred to as Buddha or the Supreme Buddha. And that his name is Siddhartha Gautama. And so, Paula, congratulations. And for everyone that's listening, this week we're giving away a copy of Richard Hammond's The Unknown Universe, kind of going with the show topic today. So we'll announce the Mind Yoga question a little bit later in the show where you can win a copy of that book. So let me get John back here. Okay, John, so before we went to the break, you said that the Earth is a nursery. I mean, this is just fascinating stuff. The Earth is a nursery for our souls. And so let me just kind of put out what that kind of elicited in me during the break. So is what you're saying, and you can kind of clarify your points here, is that we, like, reincarnate so that we can develop our personal soul, and we're just kind of put back in these containers, as you use the word, to develop to a point of, I'll say, spiritual evolution to, I'm not sure do what, I'm hoping you can fill in that blank for me. Or is there the belief that we will ascend? I mean, I hate to say, you know, like you see on Stargate, you know, where the ancients ascended. Why do this whole thing?
We're here for our souls to mature, and by maturing, I mean we have to learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And sometimes we keep reincarnating until we learn that. Now, sometimes it takes 100 reincarnations. Sometimes it takes 200 reincarnations. Sometimes it takes 500 reincarnations. But we're stuck here on Earth until our souls mature to the point where we can live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And then we go to a place, we get to go play in the stars. And if you imagine, just imagine what you think heaven is, and then exponentially multiply that by 1,000, and that's where you get to go. You get to go out and play in the other planets and the other universes and really have a lot of fun. But until you learn to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, you're stuck here. When you die, you get a quick meeting with all the people that your friends that you that have died before you, and you get to meet them and love them and have a great talk for 5 minutes or so, and then you're given a review of your life, and there is no judgment. They show you every single little nasty thing you ever did in your life, and then they show you all the good things you did in your life, and then you're slipped back into a baby that's about 3 days old. And then you start the whole process over again, trying to learn to live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed.
I have to ask this question. So do you consider yourself a spiritual person, or is this just you sharing with me information that you've heard from your sources?
This is information I've heard from sources that that really know what's going on.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking is because it's a very spiritual sounding message. You know, that's one of my things is ancient religions and, you know, comparative religions and, you know, the message is always the same no matter where you go. And your message is the same as theirs too.
Yeah, well, you know, religions were invented by the aliens to keep people, to give them rules and regulations to live by until they figured out the integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And they give them a God to believe in and, the Bible to read and stuff like that. But it was all generally a hoax. In order to give us something to believe in, to something to hang on to as we go on through our life, learning to mature our soul.
Well, you know, we call that the God with the little g on this show. So there was a question in the chat room, and I kind of wanted to go back here anyway, and it's from Karen. It says, John, if no government program has been to the moon, but NASA has pictures of the moon, is NASA a private company?
NASA's always been a private company, but the pictures that we got from the moon are by orbiters that are highly protected from the Van Allen Belt. Now, the Van Allen Belt extends from 450,000 miles to 25,000 miles above Earth. And no human can survive that. But orbital cameras, like the Lunar Orbiter series, like the Zond series, like the Ranger series, they all can be protected with lead, lots of lead, and they can go out there and take pictures and stuff. But no human can go without help from an ET.
See, that's kind of interesting. A friend of mine had this in-depth conversation about the Van Allen Belt and being able to get through it and blah, blah, blah. And interesting that you say you can't get through it because that was his opinion too. Why did NASA or the government or whatever even bother doing the whole space program in the first place and, you know, was it that Kennedy wasn't briefed on what was really going on, and so he put out that directive, and they felt compelled to follow that directive? Or was there something else going on that was deeper that made them fake this whole Apollo thing and the whole landing on the moon thing?
Well, I'm not sure, but That is a good question. Was it Kennedy that set them up? And if he did, he must have been given some briefing. NASA was formed in 1958 by the Nazis that were let in under Operation Paperclip. And they had their own plans for space vehicles, which didn't include putting man on the moon. But for whatever reason, that program went along and paid a lot of bills and generated a lot for the economy, but it was for naught because they knew that there was no way they could get through the Van Allen belt. And the most vociferous guy in the Apollo group was Gus Grissom, and they finally had to murder him to shut him up. And the reason they did that was to tell everybody else, hey, look, shut up, or the same is going to happen to you. Because Gus Grissom, you know, was the one who hung the lemon over the Apollo 1 and said, this thing ain't going to the moon in 2 years, this thing ain't going to the moon in 10 years. Because he knew he was an engineer, and he knew by looking at it that they weren't near ready for something like that. So it just happened that one day, the Apollo spacecraft could fit four, and the fourth person in there was just there for test purposes, and he would help them work out their problems. And what he did is he laid down, put his feet down where the moon rocks were supposed to go, and his head laid against the instrument panel, so he was actually looking up at the astronauts, and he had his own mic and his own headphone, and he would help them work out the program. And the guy who usually did that was Joe Shea, who was the head of the Apollo program. Well, it just happened that one day Joe Shea was in New York, he couldn't do it, so he put one of the secret astronaut teams members, the secret astronaut teams that we don't know about, and they put him in there so that when the fire started intentionally, it killed all four of them.
I love it. The secret astronaut program that we don't know about because it's a secret. could you maybe talk about that for a second? I mean, unless it's that big of a secret and you don't know the secret, but I think you do.
Sure, the secret astronaut program was to weaponize space. It was called Star Wars, but what they did is they put up 24 or 26 weaponized orbiting platforms, in addition with two naval command platforms, which ran the 26 weapons weaponized platforms. And it's the secret astronaut team that does that. And one of the ways we figured that out is every time the space shuttle went up, it would always take 3 days to get there, whereas the Russians would get there in 9 minutes. And and so I got to figure out, now, why would it take us 3 days to get there? And so by looking at things, and we just happened to run into some manifests, we found out that what those 3 days were used for was to stop at the different space platforms and drop off fruit, food, supplies, people, and everything else that they needed. That's what they were doing with the 3 days. And then coincidentally, two Russian rockets would arrive at the International Space Station just prior to the time that the shuttle got at the space station, and all the stuff that they had in those Russian rockets would be transferred to the shuttle. And then you ask, well, why did the shuttle always take 2 days to get back when it's only 54 minutes from undocking at the International Space Station to landing at Kennedy? Well, they weren't going direct to Kennedy. They had to go back down the line with all the food and the supplies and vegetables and people that the Russians had brought up with their two rockets. And that's what they were doing when they undock. And you know, the guys on the internet who are trying to keep this a secret say, oh no, they weren't doing that. They were exercising and they had to have 2 8-hour consecutive rest periods for all the work they had to do on the ISS, and just baloney after baloney of what they're really doing. But what they were really doing is going back down the line to feed the people that were on these orbiting platforms.
Coincidentally, we went to NASA in Houston, which was kind of a joke. But one thing that I did learn, which I thought was fascinating, was that the International Space Station, the Russian Space Station, one of them, that it gets, they just send unmanned rockets up there and it just sends them food supply. So why wouldn't they just do that with these space platforms?
Oh, why wouldn't they send them direct to the space platforms?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a good question. There's space platforms. I don't know whether they're arranged to receive that those rockets. It's easier to take it to the International Space Station, be inspected, and then have it taken down by the shuttle. Now the shuttle's supposedly make its last flight this year, and they have plenty of other ways to get up there. In other words, they have four kinds of rockets that are man-rated. They have the Delta and the Sea Launch and several other rockets that can take people up there, and they have other ways to bring them back down.
So you mentioned that the space platforms were started fairly early, but I thought the whole Star Wars thing was a Reagan thing. But I thought that was a Reagan thing, which was like way before Reagan.
It was, yeah. It started in 1968, and they were taking all the money that they were supposedly spending on Apollo to start these weaponized platforms. And then when Reagan came along, they just changed the name to Star Wars.
Was this part of the Cold War, or was there some other purpose for them?
There was never any Cold War. After World War II, we were friendly with
Russians.
Well,
I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
So why do we have them? I guess would
the
be
Cold
the...
War was a, the Cold War was a hoax to keep the public occupied and afraid of the Russians, when in fact we were friends of the Russians, and doing this weaponized space platforms along with the Russians.
But if we're not fighting with the Russians or the Chinese or whoever, then why do we even need the space platforms in the first place?
Well, the original reason for these platforms were to get rid of the Greys, because the government thought they were a threat. And there's some of the aliens. We deal with 6 or 7 species of aliens, and some of them think that, and especially in the early programs, we thought we were going to get rid of the Greys because we thought they were hostile. But in fact, they're not. They're here to help us. And that's the way it's going to be. They're so far advanced that there's no way we're going to get rid of them. There's no way we're going to kill them. There's no way we're going to stop them. They are there to protect us and protect the containers, and that's the way it's going to be. So the weaponized platforms turned into an agenda for the people that run the United States to create the problems that they've been creating. For instance, one of those weapons uses molecular disassociation as a weapon, whereas when they fire it, whatever they hit disassociates itself to its primary components, which means nothing is left except a piece of dust 80 microns in diameter, and that was what was all over New York on the ground, and which was 3 inches high. That was all the steel and the concrete that was part of the World Trade Center. When you use regular demolition techniques to destroy a building, you're going to have 13% of the building left, and that's because regular demolitions don't destroy a building, they just bring it down. So so that you can haul it away. But in the world, case of the World Trade Center, there was a less than one story left, and that's because all the rest of it was disintegrated into this dust that was falling all around Manhattan, which was a maximum of 80 microns in diameter. It just turned it completely to dust. And the reason they did this was because they wanted to turn American public opinion against Arabs, Muslims, in order to come up with an excuse to attack Afghanistan. And the reason we wanted to attack Afghanistan is because of the huge, tremendous thousands and thousands of acres in the Hindu Kush up in the northeast Afghanistan is prime growing for the opium poppy. And Afghanistan output in 2001, according to New York Times, was 15%. And in 2007, it went to 95%. Now, it's not Al-Qaeda or the Taliban that's doing that. That's us. That's us harvesting, planting, growing, distributing. And that's trillions of dollars of black dollars that we don't need to report to Congress for our black projects. So there's one thing the military hates to do. It hates to tell Congress what they're doing and why they need the money. So if they can generate their own cash, they don't need to ask Congress for any of that. They just grow it themselves, distribute it themselves, and take that money and do whatever they want.
So what I'm hearing you say is that 9/11 was, and I think the right term is a false flag operation, and we basically did this to ourselves?
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. I mean, this was my thought, you know, with the whole thing. It's like, if we didn't do it to ourselves, we definitely used it opportunistically, you know, to get the Patriot Act in there and to cut down our personal freedoms and to just control
Absolutely.
Us
All
more.
That was inclusive. All that was inclusive.
I think the commentary about the beam thing, taking it down to 80 microns, I mean, because when you saw pictures of Ground Zero, I mean, my first thought was, where's the rest of the building? And they were like, well, you know, the garage goes down seven levels. I'm like, we're talking about, you know, 100 stories. You know, there should be a pile of rubble here. There should be something.
Yeah, there should have been something, yes.
You know, and there was just a few little beams, kind of, and a lot of very sick people in the aftermath, which is bad.
Yeah.
I have a friend who was a first responder. She had a rescue dog, and now she has very serious lung issues, which, of course, they didn't warn them to wear respirators.
Right.
Okay, so we've talked about the moon, and I have another question, you know, because you've talked about how they've, you know, photoshopped or airbrushed the pictures, but haven't like the Japanese or the Chinese and some other countries been going up there and haven't they been taking pictures recently?
No,
and are they doing the same thing?
All that was fake. We gave them all those old NASA pictures that we had. They never went up there.
So the stuff that they're saying that they're going up and they're refilming it in higher resolution and blah, 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 it's just,
yeah, baloney. Show me one higher resolution photo that the Chinese or the Russian have taken.
Well, I haven't seen any, you know.
No, I haven't either.
But you just don't know, like, you know, am I not seeing any because, you know, my access is limited? Or am I not seeing any because there aren't any to see?
There aren't
any. You kind of don't know sometimes.
Yeah, no, there aren't any.
I'm kind of looking through my questions. And so I guess, kind of sarcastically speaking, I guess that's why we're not going back to the moon. Well, I mean, and I think it was Obama was saying, you know, they're killing NASA, but then they're talking about, well, we're going to go to Mars, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, but no one's going to the moon. You know, we're just going to like bypass that whole planet.
It's just a stalling program, and the missing 700 tapes of the man landing on the moon. There were no tapes. They're not missing. They just never existed. And, you know, it never happened. So there is nothing to record, and there is nothing missing. You know, the astronauts have never, ever, the 35 years or 40 years since they've been there, never had a reunion. And the reason is because all of them were embarrassed at the sideshow they had to put on. They were all ready to go to the moon, and they thought it was a real deal, and only at the last minute were they told, you know, that it was all going to be faked. And as a matter of fact, there's a quote of Buzz Aldrin when he was in the quarantine vehicle during the three-week quarantine, and they're watching reruns, and he talked to Neil Armstrong, and his comment was, hey, look, Neil, we missed the whole thing.
That's pretty good. You know, you were talking about Gus Grissom, and it brought this to my mind. I mean, there have been the two shuttle explosions, the one of Challenger and then the other one, I don't remember what the name of it was, that exploded over Texas. Challenger, okay, you know, they were on their way up. You know, it could be faulty equipment. I don't know. Whatever.
The Challenger, don't get mixed up now, but Challenger, the reason it exploded is because one of the hold downs, there's four hold downs, that when the rocket fires, until it gets to 100%, these great big huge steel hold down clamps hold the rocket from taking off until it's at 100% thrust, and one of those had been sabotaged, and it's the one that broke the part that we say that broke because of ice. It didn't break because of ice. That thing was sabotaged. Now, as far as the other one, that was an Israeli spy mission, and I don't know. It looks to me like it was shot down, but I don't know for sure.
Well, I mean, and that was kind of some of what I heard, that they were, you know, taking pictures, and they got the information that they wanted, you know, sent back, and then they just had to get rid of all the witnesses, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that's nice. Just want to work for my government. Let's see. We just have a couple of minutes till we have to go to our next break. So let me ask you this kind of innocuous question. So have you ever seen an alien? Have you been to the moon? Maybe I should ask you that, too. Have you ever been to the moon?
Well, of course. Everybody's been to the moon.
Well, I mean that you remember.
No, not that I remember.
Have you ever seen an alien? Met an alien?
Nope.
That you didn't like?
No, never seen that.
Okay, I just had to ask. So how about when we come back from break, we do some talking about Mars, because there's a bunch of stuff, I think, that's going on Mars that I think is pretty interesting stuff. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, because there's the music. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. We're talking to John Lear. The website he contributes to is www.thelivingmoon.com. If you're enjoying the programming today, please do mark this show as a favorite, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Balance in all things is critical to maintaining health. In the hectic drive of today's world, many of us forget to take care of our most important asset, ourselves. At productforthesoul.com, we want to support your effort to nurture yourself. We offer a wide variety of herbs, supplements, and high-quality, ready-to-eat, all-natural foods. We even offer holographic chip technology products that can augment the body's natural ability to increase energy, improve sleep, and mitigate pain. Best of all of our products are delivered straight to your door. It's time to start loving yourself. Visit productsforthesoul.com and let us help you along the way. Take a journey to the dark side of the spirit world and meet the bad kids on the block in Dark Angels, an insider's guide to ghosts, spirits, and attached entities. Who are these bad kids? As a child, you might have met one at night, under your bed, in your closet, or down a dark hallway. Dark Angels is an adult dissertation about ghosts. It's filled with revealing information about how these dark forces can influence our lives. Order your copy of Dark Angels today. Visit www.darkangelsbook.com for more information.
Move past the crossroads in your life and discover alternative solutions to your deepest concerns at soulhealer.com. So whether it's a physical problem, an emotional issue, a question about work, or troubles in your relationship, naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise can help you bring peace, harmony, and health back into your life. Schedule a session today. Visit soulhealer.com right away and live the life you've been dreaming of.
Now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise and we're here talking with John Lear from thelivingmoon.com. Don't forget, we'll be asking this week's mind yoga question. John, while we were on break, I thought of kind of a follow-up question about the grays, and then somebody in the chat room posted the exact same question, so I guess, you know, like minds think alike. So this would be Space Poet asks this question. I'll use their questions. When will the aliens make themselves known to everybody on Earth?
In about 6 to 8 decades from right now.
What's the big fear? I feel like the kind of the cat's out of the bag. Everybody's seen X-Files on TV, and most people believe in aliens or are, you know, open to the topic.
Yeah, but most people don't need to know, and it's not going to happen for about six decades.
Okay. Just curious. Any reason why they're still hiding or choose to hide?
There's no reason for everybody to know the stuff that I'm telling you.
Okay.
Nobody needs to know that aliens are around here and control their lives and all that. They've got enough problems paying their taxes and bills like that. The government certainly doesn't want anybody to know because if we knew that there was a higher force, we might decide to that it's not necessary to pay taxes to the IRS. We might want to pay taxes to somebody else.
Good point. Well, then let me ask you this question. I had this question in my government question. Who's really running the show here? I mean, or, you know, there's part of me that thinks, okay, who in our government is running the show? But is our government even running the show, or are the aliens actually running the show?
Aliens are at the very top. They run the pretty much the show. But as far as the government, the president and the Congress know nothing about what's going on. It's a combination of the Nazis and Israelis. The Nazis were let in under Operation Paperclip. In the late 40s and early 50s by three people. One was John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State. One was John Allen Dulles, who was head of the CIA, and their sister, Catherine Dulles, who was head of the Berlin desk. And under Project Paperclip, they let thousands of Nazis in, who then took over various companies like Bell Helicopter and NASA. All the top people in NASA were Nazis. And they have just continued to grow and take over. There's a book by Jim Marsh called The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and he details exactly how this happened and how they took over and what they're doing.
Yeah, we've had Jim on the show talking about that topic. It's fascinating. It just, you know, you stop and look at what's going on around us. You know, you were told one thing. You know, the government's there for us. The government listens to us and then acts on our behalf.
Yeah.
What a lie. but I think it's becoming more and more transparent that there's a big lie, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to that topic. Mars. Let's talk about Mars. I think everyone that probably is listening or has listened or will listen to the show is familiar with, you know, the face on Mars that Richard Hoagland put out and was on the cover of Time magazine. What's your thought about that? And actually that whole Cydonia complex, because there's the face, but then there's also what they're saying are the pyramid structures in the, you know, basic similar geographic area as the face.
Yeah, well, and there's millions of people that live on Mars. The atmosphere is very similar to ours. They have their own business. The early photos that were taken of Mars, which included the face on Mars, are real. Everything else is fake. It's all either been taken in Canada or Antarctica. It's all fake. It all goes through the Malin space systems and is cut and cropped. So that you can't see anything. But it's so busy up on Mars. Some people live above ground, some people live below ground, but it's a huge, very, very busy place, as is all the other planets. There's life on Jupiter, Neptune, Saturn, Uranus, Mercury, Venus, all the other planets, and all the moons of those planets and all the satellites of those planets are habitated by people just like us, and some aliens, some that are very different. Our solar system is just teeming with different kinds of people.
Okay, so you mentioned Venus. I mean, I could mention other planets, but I'll just use this as an example because it's pretty simplistic. I mean, Venus is so close to, or so much closer to the sun. How could humanoid people survive there unless they were, like, underground or in some kind of, you know, protected environment? Or is that what's going on?
Because the public has been fed the BS that the sun is a fusion reactor, and it's not. It's an electromagnetic sphere. And what it does is the electromagnetic waves that go out to the different planets are modified by a planet's atmosphere to control the temperature. So Mercury, instead of being hot enough to melt lead, is the same temperature as Earth, about 72 degrees. And people live there. Same thing with Venus. They have a continual cloud cover, so they don't get to see the stars like we do. But their atmosphere controls, modifies, filters the electromagnetic wave that comes from the sun so that the temperature is very similar to Earth. And the same for all the other planets. The sun has no inherent heat. It's just an electromagnetic sphere.
Okay, I have to kind of like comprehend on that. And so even a place like Jupiter or, you know, Uranus or whatever, all pretty much the same temperature, because I guess what you're saying is outer space is all pretty much one temperature, and we're just told that the sun is what heats us.
Right. We're told that the sun is a nuclear reactor and that it's very hot, and that the closer you are to the sun, the hotter it gets, the further away, the colder it gets. Like they say on Pluto, it's like a giant refrigerator, and that's not the truth.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, I have to think on that one. It just makes me wonder, well, who makes up all of this stuff? I guess if the aliens have been here for that long, they've just passed it down as part of what they release to us that we end up sharing with other people?
No, it's just that we're kept ignorant, and it started, as far as I've been able to trace it back, it goes as far as back as 1856 when a Danish mathematician, I'm trying to remember his name, gave a lecture at the Paris Observatory conference, and he talked about his research. He was very famous and very well known for his research on Saturn, but he gave a lecture on the moon saying that it was very possible that there was life on the moon. And, of course, everybody thought that was very exciting, and he was the number one guy for several years until a guy named Simon Newcomb came there in 1870. And Simon Newcomb was a Navy admiral who was head of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., and without a shred of evidence, he destroyed this guy, this Danish mathematician's reputation and his theory that there was people on the moon. So they knew back then, the Navy knew back then that that there was people on the moon, and they were trying to keep it quiet and shut them up.
Interesting. Something you said earlier when we were talking about like what the aliens look like, and you made the comment, if you see somebody that looks kind of weird and you kind of just think the thought, you know, are you an alien? You know, they'll look at you or whatever, which would imply, you know, telepathy between us and them, or them and, well, you know, us sending them and them receiving our little mental broadcast. Would you say that that would be something where, and I'm going to say, scientific discovery, not what we're given and not what we're back engineering, but where some scientific discovery could come from, where they're broadcasting information and we're receiving it? And the reason I'm asking that is that it seems that in there are different periods in history where multiple people on the planet will all come up with the same idea at basically the same time. You know, Marconi and the radio, Tesla and Edison with electricity. I mean, there were different people not near each other that were pursuing the same thought. So could there have been some kind of, and I'll say, mind control or some kind of broadcast that gave people information so that they could pursue a technology that they were giving to us?
Yeah, everything comes from the aliens. All the ideas come from the aliens. We don't come up with it ourselves.
You know, it's just making me feel really stupid. It's like, wait, I thought we thought of all this stuff. God. Okay. And so the stuff that they're... So then let me ask this question. All right, I'm going back to Mars, just to let you know. So the face on Mars was from the 70s. I don't have an exact date. But some of the new stuff that we're seeing is supposedly coming from the rovers that are out there. So is that a true statement? Is that not a true statement?
It's coming from where?
The rovers?
Oh, the
on Mars?
I don't believe it. But there are people that do believe that there are rovers up there. But I don't think so. I don't think they can find a place that's unoccupied enough on Mars to be able to take a picture, a true picture of Mars. And you notice they're always adjusting the sky so that it looks pink when in fact it's blue. And they're just trying to convince us that there could be nobody up there. And then every once in a while we'll hear, you know, they discovered some tiny little plant that may be growing, and there's millions of people up there.
No, they only discovered like some little microbiotic one-celled algae thing, which, you know, says that there's life everywhere, which makes me laugh. But then in the pictures and the imagery that, you know, is all over the internet, why would, if it was fake, why would they bother putting in things like, and I'm sure you've seen all the pictures, you know, the what looked like a female face kind of, you know, flat on a mountaintop, or there's the, looks like a sculpture of a seated like god with his arm sticking out, even though it's really far in the distance and you can't really see it very good. So I'm a little skeptical about that image in particular. Or there are images that look like a skull.
They put stuff like that there to get everybody all excited and stuff like that. You know, it's not real.
And so they like countermeasure their countermeasure?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, one of the ones that I personally thought was really interesting was there's something that looked like it was a sculpture right out of Egypt. You know, it was like carved into a side of a mountain, and it looked like, you know, something that Ramses would have done. And I'm like, on Mars?
Yeah, that came from the first set of photos, and that may be true. But all the rest of the stuff is baloney.
Interesting. So do you think that there, well, I guess you would say yes to this, but that there's water on Mars?
Absolutely. Like there's water on the moon, rivers, lakes.
So it's not all dried up and sandy, like they say?
Right. And you can hear just in the past few months, you know, they begin to release that, oh, yes, there's ice caps, and those melt occasionally and create water and all that. They gradually have to come out with this information because they just can't keep it secret and still look like they know anything about what's really going on. It doesn't help because we never get to go there and prove it. Still there. Still there.
Hello, so this is Dr. Rita, and if anybody in the chat room can hear me talking, please do post something. I'm calling myself as if I'm a guest, and I'm hoping that something is working here. Karen, you still out there? Well, yay, I must be up and working because Karen said, yay, good job. Okay, so this is going to be interesting. So now I'm going to try to call John because this is weird. Okay, let's see if we can get the show back on the road.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hello? Yeah.
It's Dr. Rita again. Technology, you gotta love it. Do you have this problem a lot when you are on interviews with people?
Yeah, when we talk about things they don't like, they cut it off for a few minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now, okay, technology speaking, I cannot access through my primary phone. I cannot call in as myself. So I have called in as someone that has a question and have answered myself and then called you back because I still have switchboard control. I just can't talk on my phone because my phone was shut off. And still,
yeah.
I cannot dial in as the host, period.
Yeah, they don't like when there's something. There's things they don't like us to talk about, so they just shut off the phone.
Well, it's interesting. I had Jim Mars on the show. He had his last book after the Third Reich book, but he came on and he was on for 2 hours. We kind of talked about both books, and my website got hacked that day. All of them,
yeah.
Big time hacked. I was like, thanks, Jim. I loved having you on. And it was a great show, but I don't need my site hacked. And if you're listening, those people that aren't listening because you don't exist, don't do that. That was really a pain in the butt to have to fix.
Yeah.
Speaking of those people that don't exist, you did work with the CIA. I mean, do they really exist? Those people that don't exist?
Probably.
You're not sure?
No, I was just a pilot. And they don't tell pilots anything. They don't brief them about anything. All they tell them is where to fly the airplane. You don't know what's in back. You don't know why you're taking it there. All you know is you fly it to some place and you get there. And somebody else tells you where to fly next. They don't give you any kind of briefing about what it's for or anything. Now, like, you can figure it out 10 years later because you can see what you were doing, how it fit in with the whole thing. For instance, in 1977, I was taking arms and ammunition from Budapest to Somalia, and you know, I couldn't really figure out why we were doing that because Somalia has always been our enemy and Ethiopia has always been our friends. Haile Selassie was our friend, and we even had a space station there. So why were we giving guns and ammunition to Somalia? Well, it turns out a few years later, I found out that the Russians had built a deep water port called Berbera on the Gulf of Aden in Somalia, and unbeknownst to me, Ethiopia had let the Russians in to help them fight the insurgents there, and Somalia was greatly incensed and embarrassed that Russia was now supporting their lifelong enemy, so they kicked them out. And we immediately came in and said, here, let us help you. We'll give you guns and ammunition, and we'll be your friends. But, of course, all we did was, you know, give them guns and ammunition and took over the port of Berbera. Now, the reason Berbera is so important is because one day the Straits of Hormuz will close during the upcoming war between Iran and Israel and Iran and the United States, and Iran will close the Straits of Hormuz by some method, either by bombs or sunken planes, sunken boats or sunken something, and then the only way we'll have to get oil out of Saudi Arabia is that great big huge pipeline that extends southwest to the Red Sea to a town called Yanbu, and all the ships will go to Yanbu, pick up their oil, and go out the Gulf of Aden and then on to their destination. And it's important that we have a presence on the Gulf of Aden so that it can't be blocked off, so that the oil can keep flowing. And so that was something I found out years later.
About speaking of oil. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Speaking about oil, something that I just heard about this week is that Congress, I mean, I don't know if it was part of that financial package, just approved an international bank, and the international bank will be handling all the oil money transactions and taking it from being handled in dollars to being handled in whatever's, you know,
euros.
Internationals.
Euros.
Well, I wasn't sure. Well, there's the euros, but then this is supposed to be even over the European conglomerate. You know,
yeah.
It was the United States, Europe, China, all these other countries. So have you heard anything about that and the implications, or is that just too new?
No, but I can tell you that all this oil thing is a scam, that oil is abiogenic, which means it produces itself. It has nothing to do with dinosaurs or dead animals or anything like that. It reproduces itself, and we have enough oil under the earth to supply us at our present use. And even if our present use tripled or doubled or tripled, that we would have enough for the next 500 years and even more than that. So all this stuff about the oil going up and reaching peak oil is just baloney. It's not true. We have more oil than we can shake a stick at.
Yeah, I agree. So what do you think about the oil spill in the Gulf? Accident, conspiracy, a little of both?
No, that was one of those space weapons that was aimed at that to create a problem, and I don't know what the agenda was on that. They create all kinds of problems with those cool weapons they have orbiting around Earth. They did they killed the 250,000 people in that tidal wave in Southeast Asia a few years ago. They did the Mura building in Oklahoma City. Timothy McVeigh had nothing to do with that. They do all kinds of things with those weapons, but the BP oil thing was definitely their work.
I guess I just don't understand why. You know, why? I mean, other than to put us totally through our paces.
Is what?
You know, other than putting us totally through our paces. Of how awful and evil can we be so that we decide, well, maybe I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, like I say, you don't have to worry about that. All you have to worry about is yourself and that you live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, and that you take your time each day to love every member of your family. And that doesn't mean saying love you as you head out the door. That means you're taking your wife or husband and looking deep into their eyes and telling them how much you love them, and also with your children. That's all you have to do. You don't have to worry about all this oil spill and all the other stupid stuff that's going on. That's just to distract you. The only reason you're here is to mature your soul, and you're not going to mature your soul by worrying about BP and all the rest of the junk that's going on.
So they're just distracting us from what?
Maturing our soul.
What? Oh.
It's distracting us from maturing our soul.
But isn't that what we're supposed to be? It just seems like just such a conflict. You know, it's like, but isn't that what we're supposed to be doing?
What?
Is maturing?
Yes.
Although, you know, when you think of human nature, you know, I mean, when you think of human nature, it's like we learn, or my observation of how we learn best is by overcoming adversity. So So are they just like piling on more and more adversity so we have more and more to overcome so that, you know, it kind of puts you into a different state?
Right. But you just have to ignore that.
Lana Lane asked if you defined who they are. So we talked about the grays on the moon. Are there other people that are creating this havoc or having influence on us in our lives?
Yeah, there's bad guys and bad guys that have try and have influence over our life and try and lead us down the road to hell. And we're just supposed to, you know, like I say, live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. We're tempted all the time, every day, every hour, to do the bad thing. And there's people out there that their only agenda is to try and lead us astray.
And so have there ever been any, and I'm going to say battles for Earth or battles for the, you know, the population of people on Earth by these different, you know, alien groups?
Yeah, it's going on right now in the Middle East. And there's a battle for the Middle East, and it has to do with different species of aliens, and I don't know what, and I can't find out what the battle is about, but it has something to do with the Middle East.
I'll just throw this out there, but a girlfriend of mine who explores other stuff, you know, her commentary is that there's some kind of vortex or portal there that they want to get control of.
Yeah, I heard that the Stargate was down in the Gulf of Aden, and I don't believe that's true. There doesn't need to be a Stargate. Aliens and alien magic can go anywhere they want at any speed, and they certainly don't need any Stargate. That's made up by the Hollywood movie industry.
Well, and I don't think that she meant that. I think she meant, you know, like a warpage in time-space. You know, not necessarily a physical thing that they have to push button to activate. So do these aliens have physical bodies, or are they able to have physical bodies and then be more etheric? Do you know anything about that?
They can do anything they want. They can look like anybody they want. They can look like nothing. They can appear anywhere. They can come through holes in the wall. They can come through holes in the air. They can do anything. I mean, it's just, they're so far advanced, stuff that we would call absolute magic, but to them it's just normal stuff.
Yeah, it's what they do. There are people that say that we're here on Earth so that we can learn how to control our thoughts, you know, because if you could sit there and think, well, God, I wish I had a hamburger, and have that thought and have the hamburger appear and then have the thought, oh, you know, I wish so-and-so would die, you know, but you're just kind of pissed off at them, and then they die, I mean, that would be bad.
Yeah,
that would be really bad.
No, we don't have the power to do that.
But it sounds like they have enough control over their thoughts and thought patterns that they don't have those thoughts per se, and so they don't have to worry about those things happening.
Yeah, they have those thoughts, and they don't have to worry because they're completely powerful.
So let's see how much time. I'm looking at the time, because one of the other areas that I wanted to talk to you about is Area 51. So, I mean, you talked about flying around as a pilot, and they didn't really tell you anything, but did you ever get to, like, fly into Area 51?
No, I flew around it. I was a pilot for the Department of Energy, and my job was to fly around the test site and before a underground nuclear blast and give them the winds at different altitudes so that we could be sure that if there was a vent, that the wind would not blow the stuff that vented towards Las Vegas. We want to be sure that it was aimed north where there's very few people. And so I got to look at the entire test site in all the places that there were.
So from what I understand, you are, well, I'll say are friends with Bob Lazar, who, you know, kind of came to the forefront talking about what he saw and experienced in Area 51. And I was wondering if you could kind of share some, I mean, because you seem like a credible guy. And I think one of the things, I mean, he put out so much stuff and people, you know, then the follow-up was, ah, he made it up, they don't show any employment records, his credentials are fake, blah, 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 and they totally discredited the guy. You know, so what's your opinion on him? Did he actually work at Area 51?
What yeah, sure. Sure. I met him in the summer of 88, and he didn't believe any of that stuff, didn't believe in flying saucers, any of that stuff, but we spent about 4 months talking him into getting a job there, and he called Dr. Teller, the father of the H-bomb, who was head of the entire flying saucer program, and asked him if he could come to work for him. And Dr. Teller said, do you want to work with me here at Livermore, or do you want to work in Las Vegas? And Bob said, I want to work at Area 51. And Dr. Teller said, well, let me see what I can do. And then Bob went through a series of 3 technical interviews, and he says he aced every one, and he'd come back after the interview and tell me what the questions were and how he answered them, and how he aced the answers and how well he did. And then December 6, 1988 is when he came to my house and told me that was the first day he'd gone to Groom Lake, that he'd seen the saucers, touched them, and they were real. And I said, well, what are you telling me this for, Bob? Why don't you work for a while? You know they followed you here. Why don't you find out what's going on and then tell me? He said, John, you've taken so much crap over this stuff over the 6 months that I've known you that you deserve to know that it's real, I saw it, and all that.
So did he was just exposed to one UFO? Were there multiple UFOs? You know, like 9 different models, 9 of them?
There was 9 of them, 9 different shapes, but all had the same propulsion system, and his job was to back engineer the propulsion system to see if we could duplicate it. And of course we didn't, we couldn't, because it was like hundreds of thousands of years technology ahead of what we were able to do. Now, we do have our own flying saucers, we do have our own flying discs, we have our own flying triangles, but we use a different mode of power, a different mode of transportation, a different motor, so to speak. We can't use what they do because it's so far advanced. But nevertheless, that was his job, and when he was there, that's what he tried to do.
Are they still doing that kind of work, the UFO work there, or you know, are they just working on advanced plane stuff, you know, testing, stuff like that there? Do you have any idea what kind of activity is going on there now?
They've got new airplanes, they've got new kinds of transportation, they've got new kinds of technology. I mean, every day they leap ahead a year or so in technology. They have so much technology, it's unbelievable. The new Area 51 is 34 miles south of Wendover, just in Nevada, across the border from Utah. And that's a new secret base. They have another new secret base called Sandia, and that's halfway between the Tonopah Test Range and Groom Lake. And I watched them build that between 1980 and 1988. It took them 8 years to cut off the top of a mountain, install a huge underground base, and then put the mountain back on. And they have 2 or 3 runways up there, and it's a whole new, huge facility. And one of the problems they had was getting people to work there as far as transportation, because They have the red and white Boeing 737s that go out of McCarran Field, out of the, what they call the Janet Terminal, and they couldn't add airplanes because people would get suspicious that there was more airplanes, there must be more new secret projects, and they couldn't let them drive because that was too many people driving 2.5 hours every morning to go up there and 2.5 hours after work. And they also couldn't use buses because most of these guys don't want to sit in a bus for 3 hours to go up there. So what they did is they built a high-speed maglev train way underground, about 100 to 200 feet underground, and it goes from Sandia and stops at three of the major hotels, and then the terminus is at the McCarran Special Operations base where the 737s are. You can just walk down a set of stairs there, 100 feet down, and get on a train and go to Sandia, which takes about 20 minutes.
That's pretty cool. So have you ever been on the train or seen the trains?
No. No, it's too hard to get into one of those things, and I'm old enough to know better that I don't try to poke my nose into anything that could get me into trouble. I'm happy sitting behind my computer and watch everybody else get in trouble, and you know, I like to, you know, I have a collection of books and stuff to read and keep me busy. I don't need to go out and get into trouble. I'll let some of the younger people do that.
But they just need to bring you back pictures, right?
They have to what?
Bring you back pictures.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be nice. You mentioned that a number of the UFOs that, and I'm going to say people are seeing, are actually ours. Are you referring to things like the Phoenix Lights episode or even the Bentwaters situation? Or we're talking about
Bentwaters
like that.
Bentwaters was a real
Bentwaters wasn't
UFO deal. Phoenix, I don't know. Some of the more famous ones are usually ours. Because the aliens, they have a job to do. They don't have time to go around and put on displays for people. So usually the ones that you see are just us showing off our new technology.
How much in cahoots is the government in doing stuff like, and I'm just going to throw something out there, you know, from a medical perspective, you know, like introducing things or doing testing on people, you know, stuff like that. How much in agreement or in coercion, whatever, I'm not sure what the right word is the U.S. government in working with the aliens to meet their agenda? I mean, they obviously are tolerant and are listening, but do they actively support their agenda? They're a group that act, you know, I'm just thinking X-Files, I'm sorry, you know, and there's just this whole group of government people that would just do stuff and either say it was the aliens or they were doing it on behalf of the aliens.
Yeah, about 35 years ago, they showed us how to clone people, and we have armies of cloned people that don't have souls, but they're under our command. Most of them are in Saudi Arabia. Most of them haven't been used, but if there's ever a war somewhere where we need manpower, we can always go and use these people. They have no fear. They're taught to do what they're told, and they are troops. They're trained with weaponry. They know how to kill, but like I say, they have no soul. They're just armies of people, thousands of people that are ready to fight on a moment's notice for us, their governors.
That's scary. Soulless people. I mean, that makes it even worse. Weird. I mean, I can't imagine interacting with someone that doesn't have a soul and what they would be like, you know, what their, I mean, because I believe everybody has their own energy, and I can't imagine what their energy would be like. I don't know. Okay, we had one question in the chat room. I have read about bases of ETs near Area 51. Can you talk about them?
What was the question?
This is from Karen in KC, and she wrote, I have read about a base of ETs near Area 51, and do you know anything about that?
Yeah, the Tall Whites, they live under Desert Springs, the Creech Air Force Base, and back in the 50s, we built them a $300 million facility where they could live. And what they do is they use this place as a stopping off place for places that they go. And in exchange for technology, we built them a huge place where they could sleep and have their quarters and stuff. And they're the Tall Whites. They're about 7 feet tall and completely white. And they have wives and children and everybody that lives there. And there's two or three books about them. One of them is called Millennium One, or let's see if I see it here on my desk. Millennial Hospitality. And it was written by a guy named Hall, H-A-L-L. It's a good book. You ought to read it, or somebody ought to read it, because it tells about how we discovered the Tall Whites and what we did and how we kept it secret. And coincidentally, about 10 years ago, a friend of mine named Bill Hamilton and I used to do a lot of research together, and I was a qualified hypnotherapist here in Nevada, and he called one day and said he was going up to the Black Mailbox to check it out and see if anything new was going on. And, you know, of course, none of us expected anything to happen. And he went through Las Vegas on a Monday, and he called Tuesday, and he said, hey, John, something interesting happened last night, but I don't know what it was. And I said, well, when are you coming back? He said, Wednesday. And I said, well, drop by my house, and we'll talk about it. So he dropped by my house, and he said, you know, that he was at the Black Mailbox and at night with his wife, and looked way in the distance towards the south, and he saw what appeared to be two truck lights coming towards him. And as they got towards his vehicle, he opened the door, and it went over his vehicle. And as he turned around, all it was a truck, an 18-wheeler, going up the road behind him. And he just couldn't understand how it could come out of the desert. So anyway, I said, well, do you want to try and do a regression? And he said, yeah, let's do that. So I didn't turn on a recorder because I didn't anything to expect to happen, but we did, and it was extremely interesting because of what it was is the Tall Whites had seen him and read his mind, and that he wanted to meet them. So they came directly over his truck. And they beamed him up about 50 feet into the space vehicle, and they put him in a lounge chair, and they said, okay, what do you want? And he said, well, what do you mean, what do I want? And they said, well, you called us. And he said, oh, well, you know, I don't know who you are or anything. And they said, well, we're referred to as the Tall Whites, and the guy gave his name as, let's see, what was his name? It wasn't Dylan. It was, I can't remember the name. Anyway, they interviewed him and took a few measurements on him and chatted with him for a while and then put him back on the ground. And the way they put him back on the ground is they opened the door and his truck was about 50 feet down there, and they said, go ahead and step out. And he said, well, won't I hurt myself? And they said, no, you'll just drift down in the beam. And so he stepped out, and he just slowly drifted down beside his truck and got in the truck. And his wife had been put out the whole time. And then they both woke up at the same time, and he had no memory of what I just told you. And then he called me on the phone, and I brought out that memory with my regressive hypnosis experience.
Wow.
Let's see, his name
That's
was...
That's a trip. That's just a trip. John, we have like 2 minutes left, and I want to end on this question. So why do you do this? I mean, you put out a lot of information that, you know, I could see where people would see would be very controversial. You know, and if the government's sitting there listening to you and would shut my phone off,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera. Why do you do this? What motivates you to do this?
Well, I'm just fascinated in everything that's going on. I love secret stuff. I love to find out secret stuff. And if somebody calls and wants to interview me, I'm happy to talk about it. I don't publish a book. I don't put out a tape or a DVD or anything like that, because information changes so fast that were I to write a book or a DVD, it would probably change the next day. So I don't even bother. I just tell everybody, you know, when I give an interview, that that information is good until midnight tonight, and, you know, tomorrow it may change. And so I just work every day, and I follow up leads and watch the news and try and figure out stuff.
Well, that's great. I just really appreciate the fact that, you know, you do the research that you're doing, and you come and share time with us on the show. Fascinating stuff. I mean, some of the stuff that you've shared, it was the first time I've ever heard it, you know. I mean, actually, before the show, I was doing some research, and the whole thing about, you know, the moon being towed, I had never, ever heard that one before. That was just, this is fascinating stuff. And
yeah,
we're getting thank yous from the chat room.
There's
thank yous from the chat room.
Okay, great.
And there's the music. John, thank you so much for coming on, and you're always a welcome guest on the show. So if you have some new information, or if there's like juicy stuff going on the planet, you know, maybe you'll come back on and share it with the listeners.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And then next week, this whole thing is just being retarded, I swear. Next week, we are going to be having Marla Martinson talking about what it's like being a real-life matchmaker. That's quite a follow-up to this show. And then in the second hour, we have a change. It was supposed to be Joan Borshenko, but actually now we're going to be having my good friend Jerry Pippin from jerrypippin.com coming on talking about Roswell and some new information, Angel Fire, and the big conference that's coming up, and who knows what with Jerry. So until next week, I'm Dr. Rita Louise.
Join host Dr. Rita Louise each week at this time for Just Energy Radio. Point your browser to www.justenergyradio.com for more show information and to contact Dr. Rita. Until next time, remember, it's all just energy.